Hey, family. Dr. Darnielle Jury Harmon is an award-winning Inc. 5000 recognized CEO. She actually started Incredible One Enterprises, her company, from a dream. She specializes in transforming six-figure service-based entrepreneurs into CEOs who make, move, and lead millions, as she says. Harmon and her work have been featured in Inc., Yahoo, Finance, Success, Forbes, O, and Black Enterprise magazines. She's done a host of podcasts, and we are delighted to have her here on Ask JBH. Enjoy Darnielle Jury Harmon. Darnielle, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, JBH. I am so excited to be here with you.
Well, I'm excited to be here with you as well. It is, you know, it's been a dream of mine to have you on Ask JBH because your story, while like so many others, is poignant, enriching, and teaching. It just touches my heart in a certain way. And there's so much for us to discuss. No better place than acknowledging your challenging early life. You were born to a drug-addicted mother and father. And you actually experienced your mother's incarceration. Let's start there and talk about how these experiences shaped your resilience and your drive to succeed.
Oh, gosh, I love this. This is going to be an amazing conversation. I'm so excited. So I always say my upbringing was chaotic at best. I'm so grateful that from a very early age, I had enough foresight to look at what was happening around me and to make a decision that that was not going to be my life. I have seven brothers and sisters on my mom's side, and there's four of us on my dad's side. They share three. And I am the only one of my mom's children who graduated from high school, went to college, and have an advanced degree. So very early, I just knew, and I don't even know, it was a sixth sense maybe. It was the God in me that there was favor on my life and I could make a different decision. And so my life has been flowered with making different decisions and breaking those belief barriers, the things that I observed as a child, the things that I took in, the lessons that I learned from my family. There was always a filter that just knew it did not have to be true for me. And I constantly leaned into that. I remember being in high school, and my school guidance counselor, Mr. Cook, he was a savior in so many ways, like Miss Dixon, who had been my first savior when I was in the fifth grade. And he kept telling me how unique and resilient, using the word you just used, I was at such a young age. And he couldn't believe how I had made these decisions to alter my path, right? My older brother, jail, my younger sister, teenage pregnancy, my older sister, like just all around me succumbing to the environment that we were in, but that decision to seek education and to seek excellence at that young age is what led me to being the woman that I am today.
It's incredible, the woman you are today. She is incredible. And listen, we have to honor that because we can learn as much from people what not to do as we do what to do. You
Absolutely.
Did have favorable examples in your life. I think you mentioned the encouragement of your teacher, Mrs. Dixon. Share a little bit more about that pivotal moment when she influenced your youth in a way that has affected your adulthood.
Absolutely. I would not be here if it was not for Mrs. Dixon. When I was in her class in the fifth grade, I was a very angry little girl. And I thought rightfully so, right? I had just watched my mom go to jail and I was living with my dad and my stepmom, who it was no secret that she wished we weren't there. Mm-hmm. We ruined her happy little fairy tale with my father because my dad handled his responsibility when my mom went to jail. And Miss Dixon would not let my anger stifle my potential. I remember I was in the fifth grade and we were going to recess. In class, we had been learning about purpose. Mm-hmm. And just before I walked out the door or ran out the door to go to recess, she pulled me aside and she asked me if I had ever heard of a journal. Mm-hmm. I hadn't. And she gave me a composition notebook, one of those black and white notebooks, nothing special, with this assignment. She said, every time you get angry, I want you to write about it. I don't think Miss Dixon knew that I was as angry as I really was, because I filled that journal so fast. Within about 2 weeks, it was filled to the brim. And I remember what I can describe today, you know, my 48-year-old self, that it was a cathartic experience. And putting the negativity on paper got it out of my body. It got it out of my energy, and it created space and capacity for something else. And I remember running back to her after getting off the school the day I filled the journal and had the revelation. Again, this is the adult version of myself recounting what happened at 10. And I remember telling her that I had found my purpose, that I wanted to use words to change people's lives, because writing down how I felt, it was a game changer. It was a defining moment. It was a crossroad experience where I took the road less traveled, and it made all the difference. If I can borrow from the Robert Frost poem, A Road Less Traveled By, I don't know if I would be doing the work that I am doing today in the way that I'm doing it had I not had that experience at age 10. So I'm so grateful to Miss Dixon. I'm grateful that we stayed in touch beyond the fifth and sixth grade. And when she passed, I gave her eulogy. Like, it's just amazing the blueprint, the footprint that she was in my journey. And I'm just so grateful, so grateful.
Well, as we talk about your life here and her importance to it, let's give pause in respect for Miss Dixon. Danielle, do you keep the journals today that you had then? And do you have the old ones?
I do. I have every journal I have ever written in. I have two big storage lockers in my basement that are filled with journals.
Maybe even a miniseries.
I mean, it's funny because a few years ago, I worked on a docuseries of my life. And as a part of that, we talked about the story of Mrs. Dixon, and we showed many of the journals. The very first one is yellow. Mm-hmm. we're talking a long time ago, but I still have them. And writing and expressing myself through words is still a way that I keep my energy high and allow myself to focus on what's most important, right? You know, the things that happen all around us still happen. We just learn how to behave and respond to them, which, you know, helps to aid our resilience, right? And so journaling has long been and will be for the rest of my life a way that I do self-care. It's probably one of my most important self-care practices, to take time to stop and reflect and to really get to the heart of how I'm feeling at any particular point in time. Because again, it gets it out of my body and allows me to create space and capacity for whatever might be next for me, which is important, especially when you're a high achiever. So all of our high achievers out there who are listening, creating that container to compartmentalize, or maybe not even compartmentalize, but to express how you are feeling when you maybe can't use the words to someone else, because it could create a reaction that maybe you don't want, right? Because, you know, sometimes I can't relate to my husband how I'm feeling, but I can always take it to a journal and synthesize it. And then when it's no longer a space of anger, I can detach from it and have a productive conversation and express how I'm feeling and speak my truth. And it just allows us to always exist in a positive place instead of a place that, you know, could take us on a tangent that's not necessarily the way we should go.
So many people who I talk with, Danielle, keep journals, especially as you referenced high achieving people. Early in my life, I began to journal. And then later in my life, I added affirmations to that. You can see a shelf of books behind me, but trust me, the room is filled on three walls with books. And these shelves go up way high. The important thing is that each of these books I've read, and then many of them I've actually written, because they're filled with my journals and I keep them. Mm-hmm. They're filled with my affirmations over and over again, year after year. And so words have power. Words can bring thought to life. You said your purpose is to use words to change lives. Certainly your words have changed your life and how you speak to yourself has helped you to continue to elevate. Give us an example or two of how your words have transformed someone else's life or perspective, before we get into the conversation I'm excited to have about Incredible One Enterprises.
Awesome. So just last week, I did a keynote for the Boat Collective, which is an organization that I'm ecstatic to be a member of. They asked me to be the opening keynote for our conference. The theme was paradigm shift. And so my talk was the paradigm shifts that we have to make in order to make more millions, right? And so 214
million to earn 1 million. You go to jail for making it. The U.S. Mint makes it. You earn it.
Duly corrected and noted. Thank you for that. 214 women in the room. Our collective revenue in 2023 was $1.2 billion. Women, you know, making $100,000 a year, and women making $30 or $40 or $50 or $100 million a year, all came up to me to express how my talk opened something in them, helped them to reevaluate something. Several people were like, I want you to come and talk to my family, because the way that you understand money and the way that you were able to articulate it to us so that it could resonate deeply with us, so that we can shift the way we think and then therefore shift the way we act in response to and around money, is changing my life. I am still getting text messages from people talking about that talk. And that was just 2 weeks ago. My purpose in leveraging my purpose is to make sure that every time I open my mouth, I say something that creates a disruption or a shift that changes the way that people live and move inside of their life experience so that they can make the world a better place. I think, sorry about that. I have these alarms that go off periodically throughout the day. I call them my abundance alarms to remind me that I sit in the significance of abundance. And so that was my 7 o'clock alarm. My apologies, I should have turned it off. But I do that just to keep myself centered and grounded, because when you are a high achiever, when you're the CEO of a company, sometimes the things that are coming at you want to alter your state. And I want to sit in the significance consistently of just how abundant I am and what I have the ability to create. And that's another example of the types of things that I share when I'm speaking, because I think that art imitates life. And I think that once you figure out how to do anything that moves your life forward, there's an obligation to share it with other people, right? We often quote the Gandhi-ism, be the change you want to see in the world, right? We often quote that. And the best way to be the change you want to see in the world is to allow your words to influence how other people see things so that they can also experience a change. And that's kind of the way I try to live.
Love, 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 love it.
Thank you.
Now then, moving from a promising corporate career to entrepreneurship wasn't in your initial plans, right?
It wasn't.
What was the turning point that made you realize you needed to pursue your own path in a different way?
I'm so glad you asked me this. This is something else I really love talking about. So I was 12 years into my corporate career when I started to question if there was more to life than sitting behind someone else's desk. I didn't have any entrepreneurs that I could readily access in my own life, right, as I was growing up. Unless you count my brother, who was a drug dealer, but we're not going to count him. And so entrepreneurship was never a thing. I was engaged to be married in my 20s. And 3 months before our wedding, my ex-fiance confessed that he had gotten an older woman in our church pregnant. And as you could imagine, the bottom fell out of my life, right? I was going to spend the rest of my life with this man. And here I was at a crossroad of questioning everything. A good friend let me mope and moan for, you know, a few months. And then eventually she said, you know what, enough of this. And she took me to a Mary Kay skincare class. And so in that skincare class, in addition to learning skincare, I made the decision to start a side business in Mary Kay Cosmetics. And as a result of being in Mary Kay, they pumped us with personal development. And so as a result of going to the seminars and the trainings that they put on, I started to realize that there was something greater for me to do. I didn't know what it was, but I knew that there was something greater. And I made the decision. I mean, literally just one day, JBH, I literally woke up December the 19th, 2004. It was my last day of working in the year because I always took the last 2 weeks off. And I went to work. I woke up with a knot in my stomach that by the time I got to work was a lump in my throat. And without knowing what I was going to do, I literally walked into my boss's office and I told her that it was my last day. Mm-hmm. And I decided in that moment that I was willing to bet on myself, that if it didn't work, I had an MBA, I would be able to get a job. But I would never know if the curiosity that was burgeoning as a result of Mary Kay Cosmetics was enough to fuel a career change that would truly allow me to be the impact that I knew I was created to make. And working at a bank, a credit card company, just wasn't going to allow me to change lives the way that I knew and had become resonant with recognizing that I was supposed to. And so I did it. I did the unthinkable. I quit my job without a plan. I said, I'll start and operate my
pink Cadillac.
I did. I earned 2 pink Cadillacs in my tenure. I became number one in my state and in my national area. It was an amazing experience, and allowed me to cut my teeth in entrepreneurship. And I wouldn't change. I know, like, in addition to Miss Dixon being a defining moment, that engagement falling apart, going into Mary Kay Cosmetics, deciding to quit my job, another set of defining moments, because I defied the odds. I said earlier, I'm a belief barrier breaker. People all around me, so many women I encountered that had been in Mary Kay for years, within 5 months of quitting my job, I earned the pink Cadillac.
Well, that is incredible. And you know, it's also because you mentioned Mary Kay, believable in other circumstances, we say that's unbelievable. Right where I met one of my dearest friends in life, she had gone through a horrible circumstance with her husband. And she thought, oh, I'll tell him Mary Kay is for fun. But she talked with enough people to understand that it also was for finance, fun and finance together. She learned bookkeeping. She learned other areas of personal grooming about how to teach it. She had it in herself, how to teach it. Mm-hmm. Having it and teaching it can be different things.
Yep.
She got the pink Cadillacs. She never did leave her husband, but her earning power changed his perspective of her. Yeah. Therefore, it changed how he treated her. And I asked her, what was it about Mary Kay different than anything else? She said, well, actually, it's the opportunity for me as an African-American woman to grow, because she felt absolutely no differences there with respect to her race or skin, other than how they taught them to bring out the beauty of it differently than other cosmetics did. And she said it was Mary Kay's life motto, don't limit yourself. Mm-hmm. And she said that really hooked for her.
Yep.
As I sit here and I talk with you, Darnielle, I'm seeing you an elevation and an iteration of that very teaching.
Wow.
And so I'm just thrilled for our family to hear your story and learn from you. You described something once. You said your decision to leave your job was your Keith Sweat moment. Like our family who don't already know, understand who Keith Sweat is and how that played into that day. Walk us through that day and how you felt making that life-changing decision without a clear plan.
Yeah. And don't try this at home, family. Don't try this at home, okay? So I remember waking up December the 19th, 2004, and immediately upon waking, the very first thing I do, as soon as my eyes pop open, is I spend time in immense gratitude. I pray. I set intentions for my day. I do that before I get out of the bed, right? And so I remember starting the process to pray, and I felt this quickening in my spirit that something just ain't right, which is the lyrics to Keith Sweat, who is an R&B singer, very popular in the 90s. I mean, he's still out there now. He did some work with LaVert and Johnny Gill and LSG.
Don't sleep on him.
Listen, his music is timeless. I still listen to it to this day. But immediately that that song just popped into my spirit. I speak a lot of time in music, right? Mm-hmm. And as I got up and I got dressed, I'm still praying as I'm getting dressed and I'm about to walk out the door, and I have this knot in my stomach. And it, for me, fear has become an indication that my next level is present. Mm-hmm. I don't allow fear to stop me. It's not a flight response anymore. It's a lean in response, right? What is about to happen? And so I had this knot that was nervous energy, that was fear. It was anxiety because I knew I had to do something that I wasn't prepared for. And I drove to work and I'm talking to myself and I'm praying the whole time. And I've got music playing in the car to just try to calm my nerves a little bit. And by the time I crossed the threshold in the parking lot, I was clear that this was my last day. And I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't have a letter of resignation prepared or anything. Mm-hmm. I got out of the car. I walked into the building. I waved to the security guard. I hit the button to take the elevator up to the second floor, got in the elevator, hit button number 2. And by that time, this knot is now sitting right here. Mm-hmm. It's a lump in my throat. And I'm nervous and I'm like, I'm going to go. I don't have a plan. And now at this point in time in my career, JPH, I was making $120,000 a year. I was doing well. I'm like 27 years old. I'm a mover and a shaker. I had progressed in my career so substantially. And my boss at the time, the director of the department, because I was a department manager, looked to me as a leader, right? And was probably secretly grooming me to continue to elevate in the career path within the organization. And I got to my desk, I put my bag down, I grabbed a legal size pad of paper. I have never gone into this much depth into this story. I didn't even talk about it this deep in my book. I scribbled on the paper, JBH, today is my last day. And I signed my name and I knocked on her door. She said, come in. I went in and I said, good morning, Carolyn, how are you? And she said, it's already been a day. And I said, well, I think this is going to add to it, but I just need to let you know. I handed her the piece of paper and said, today is my last day. I paused, not looking for her permission, but to make sure she understood that I was serious. And I turned around to walk out. And I went back. I packed up my belongings. I didn't even stay for the day. Like, I literally went and packed up my belongings. I called my bestie who was off that day and we went to lunch. And then I remember screaming when I got in my car. I'm like, oh my gosh, what did I just do? I just quit my job. I don't know what I'm going to do. My Mary Kay business at the time was mediocre at best. It was not amazing. And so I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I was smart enough to have savings. That was one of the things my dad taught me from a very young age. He had me when I was 13, I had to put 50% of every check in the bank. Mm-hmm. And even though he stole that money from me, he was an addict, as we talked about already. Even as I grew to become an adult and I started to get a paycheck, I was very big into saving. So I had a cushion to guide me for a period of time until I figured out what I was going to do next.
And many of us were brought up, as in my house, where you were taught to save 10%, hide 10%, and keep cash in the house.
That's right.
You taught that. Was that yours too?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That to the T. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it made a difference. Now, what ended up happening, now this was God in me making the decision to quit my job. So I quit on December the 19th. Well, on January the 5th, the company announced layoffs and severance packages for all of the employees. Because I left, because I had that 2 weeks of vacation, my actual end date wasn't going to be until January the 6th. I ended up getting severance and got paid for a full year to go out and figure out what I was going to do with my life. I took all of that money and I invested it. Won't he do it? Listen, I mean, it was for me, it was the God wink that this was what I was supposed to do, that I was supposed to walk away from that job. Mm-hmm. And it took me about 2.5 years. I did Mary Kay full time before I realized that I was supposed to start Incredible One Enterprises. But I mean, I am just grateful that I have always been
for you. That was necessary.
So necessary.
Because it didn't just tide you over. You had a year's income that could tide you over. It didn't just give you something to do while you waited to see what would happen for you. The God wink, it told you something was about to happen. Open, listen, and learn for it. I think it was really important because it allowed you to emotionally and spiritually adjust yourself for Incredible One Enterprises. And then on that night in September 30, 2007.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, you dreamed Incredible One Enterprises.
I did.
Danielle led this vision to come to you. And really, how did it evolve from an initial dream to this reality, this beautiful reality?
So I finished my second pink Cadillac on September 30th, 2007. Unlike the first one, which happened without me even realizing it was happening, the second one I really had to work for. And I hold the belief, JBH, that when God gives you something, it doesn't need batteries. And so I worked really, really hard, which was an indication to me that this was coming to an end. And so that night after we finished, whoo, blood, sweat, tears, the whole nine, as I was going to sleep, I said, Lord, I know you have something else for me. Will you show it to me? Now, I did not expect for my dream to reveal it. And so what happened in the dream is I saw myself, I was dressed to the nines, and I was walking into a building that had a marquee that read Incredible One Enterprises. Now, before that point, there was no thought of my own business. There was absolutely not a business name. There was no visions of an office building that would have my name on it. So I believe that when you are in alignment with your creator, he will speak to you in a multitude of ways, right? We know that for Moses, it was the burning bush, right? You know, it could be any scenario. And for me, it was a very clear and vivid dream. There was no questioning when I woke up that God had delivered the answer to the prayer I had just made to him the night before. And I immediately sprang into action. I was like, okay, my company's name is Incredible One Enterprises. Well, what do we do? And God reminded me, when you were a little girl, I gave you your purpose to use words to change the lives of other people. And so for me, that meant two things. I was going to write because I love writing. So I wrote my very first book, and I was going to get myself booked to speak. And that's what I did. My first book is called If You Understood My Past, You Would Understand My Praise. And it chronicles my story about my first ex-fiance and that, you know, that clash that was actually a defining moment, right? I believe that the definition of salvation is being snatched out of harm's way. One of my good friends, Patrice Washington, says that first God gives you a pebble, then he gives you a rock, and then he hits you with a boulder. Mm-hmm. That what happened with my ex-fiance was my boulder, because if I would have paid attention to the signs, it would have never gotten to the point where he would have gotten someone else pregnant 3 months before our wedding, because I was never supposed to marry that man.
That was good, because he got it before and
yes,
not 3 months after.
Absolutely.
Danielle, you know, you face significant challenges that you're sharing with us here, including not just disappointments, but financial struggles. And you had enough of that in the early years of your business. How did you maintain your faith and your perseverance during those times? Let's go there.
Yes, absolutely. So in 2010, officially, I filed bankruptcy. And I only say officially because that's when I actually got the courage to go through with it. I knew I needed to file before then. I made some terrible decisions with money. I you know, there is no excuse. I was not taught, right? I was born and raised financially illiterate, like many of us.
Mm-hmm.
And what I thought you did with money was actually not always sound, right? And so I made some really bad decisions. By the time I was 35 years old, around 35, I had $250,000 in credit card debt.
Mm.
I shudder as I think about it, not because I'm no longer embarrassed about it, But there was a point in time where it was a place of shame and guilt. And that is part of the reason why it took me so long to file bankruptcy, because I was so afraid of what people might think. But what I had to recognize and remember, JBH, is that my father in heaven, he saw me as who he approved me to be before I was formed in my mother's womb. So your question was, how did I maintain the faith? How did I allow these circumstances that are debilitating, that could take anybody and put them into a sea of depression, to actually be some of the most important defining moments in my life? Is because I have never forgotten who I am and whose I am. Mm-hmm. I am a God girl unapologetically. And the God in me recognizes that I am not the sum total of the mistakes that I made. And mm-hmm. that making a mistake doesn't disqualify you from greatness or favor. In fact, I'm going to go so far as to say that failure comes before success everywhere, even in the dictionary. Mm-hmm. When I think about some of the people I admire and some of the people that if I had an opportunity to spend time and space with them, I'd want to pick their brain, their stories of overcoming the odds and massive adversity, they inspire me because I believe that, and I'll make it about me. For me to do the work that I do today, I would not be a qualified expert and vessel had I not experienced the challenges that I experienced with money. I wouldn't be able to help people to understand the significance of shifting their relationship with money and turning that into a business that could make them millions of dollars a year had I not gone there first, right? Like it's almost like it would be theory if I didn't live it. But the reason why the frameworks that we utilize with our clients are so powerful and get massive results is because they're not theory. It's because it was my life experience and what I did to crawl out of the holes that I put myself in with my actions and my behaviors based on the things that I didn't know.
So Danielle, then you talk about it goes beyond theory. It's about living it. Many people are living some of the circumstances you engaged in. Many of them are listening to you right now. They may not take the path you took to entrepreneurship. Going back to work after feeling like a failure in your own business had to have been difficult. What did you learn from that experience that helped turn things around for you that can be lessons to people who may not go into entrepreneurship, but still need to understand they're working for themselves in somebody else's business?
Yeah, two things just popped into my spirit. Number one is a quote from Mary Kay Ash, right? She used to always say, you can't give up because you never know what's around the next corner, mm-hmm. right? And then the second is simply this. If it doesn't kill you, that means there's still purpose in you. If I wasn't supposed to be here after making any one of the myriad of mistakes I made on this journey, then I would have been taken out of here. Mm. But I'm still here to live, to turn the test into a testimony, to turn my mess into a message, because it can be used for someone else. I love the Marianne Williamson quote from her poem, Our Deepest Fear. She says, as you let your light shine, you unconsciously give others permission to do the same. As you are liberated from your fear, your presence automatically liberates others. It was hard to be in the circumstances and situations that I was in at the time. But because I am a woman of faith, I always knew that failure is feedback. It's an opportunity to learn. It's not death. And because of that, I was always willing to get up and dust myself off one more time and to see if we could turn things around. I would learn, right? I never made the same mistake twice, because I was paying attention to what I did, right? We would call that in business a SWOT analysis. Mm-hmm. I would look at the strengths, the weaknesses, the opportunities and the threats of any mishap and evaluate what I could tweak and change in order to prevent that from being the reality the next time. And I think that for anybody in the family who's out there, who's listening right now, who's trying to figure out how they continue to navigate maybe some of the things that they're going through right now, look at what happened, retrace your steps, and evaluate what you might do differently if you looked at it from where you are now. And give yourself permission by forgiving yourself to take one more step, to get up one more time. Because I promise you, if it didn't take you out, there's still purpose in you and there's still something to be gained from you showing up and showing up fully.
Yep. If it doesn't take you out, let it lift you up.
Yes. I love that. That's so good.
Danielle, speaking of success, I'm interested to know how you define success. And in frame from that, how are you measuring your relationship with the rest of your blood family now? Many of us, I would think to say most of us, especially those listening to you right now, if not the first in their family, certainly know or know of the first in their family. For first, you're the first one to graduate high school, to go on to higher education. I'm the first one in my family to build a multinational business. First exists on and on and on. And along with first comes some guilt, some feelings of concern, and how do we keep things? Where are you with your family, and how are you defining success? I ask those two questions together because I take from your spirit conversation that you're about the whole person and not just the day person.
Yes, I agree. So for me, success is being in alignment with God and living each day in your purpose. Success isn't about a dollar amount in a bank account, a car that you drive, or a house that you own. I believe that success is measured based on who you are internally and not what you have externally, right? As it pertains to my family, so in my immediate family, I have a good relationship with my mother today. My father passed away in 2022, which in our last in his last 33 days, there were 33 days between his diagnosis of stage four liver cancer and his passing. We had an amazing time together. I've been in therapy since I was 19, on and off, doing my work to forgive. I think my parents did the best that they could with what they have. I understand that their best may not have been the best, but it was never done from a space or place of torment or that they didn't love me. I think they loved me in their own special way. And as a result of that, part of my resilience and one of my biggest gifts is the gift of forgiveness. So I have a great relationship with my mom, with my brothers and sisters. I have one brother that we are very close. He, like me, is also a millionaire. So I'm our first millionaire. He's our second millionaire. And my other brothers and sisters, you know, we convene on edge because of this. As an adult, I get to decide where I spend my time, and I want to be in spaces that empower and edify, and not spaces that cause confusion or attempt to take me out of who I desire to be in the world. And so I, you know, one of my sisters is a complete antagonist, and I believe that she exists to try to push my buttons and rub me the wrong way. And so I choose not to spend time with her. I have a healthy appreciation for who she is. I've done the work to forgive her, but I choose not to spend time in her space. And that is my right to do so. My extended family, they are grateful, happy, celebratory of who I am and my success. They're just grateful to see the Jervy name out in the world, right? Which is amazing. And I think that for me personally, and what I wish I would say to anybody in the family that, you know, has similar relational struggles with who their family is, at the end of the day, make a decision to honor who you are and what is most important to you. And based on that decision, as you operate in integrity and unapologetically for what matters most for you and your immediate family, if you have your own children and spouse, honor that. And those who don't understand and appreciate, like you just can't entertain that. Like life in the grand scheme of things is way too short to spend time with people who don't honor and edify you. Right? We get to decide where we spend our time.
Thank you so much for that, because I know that that is something that many, many people deal with, actually struggle with. And you're showing a path toward healing, you're showing a path toward enjoyment, and you're showing a path toward humanity. So I truly appreciate that. You honor your sister, even though you don't find that it's a time right now for the two of you to be in the same space at the same time. So
Correct.
you don't close the door. You mentioned that your clients often experience significant business growth. Share with us some success stories that exemplify this area of impact of your work.
Yeah, I mean, JBH, we don't have enough time for all the success that we've created, right? No, so what I'll share is over the last few years, we've been really focused on getting our clients to the $1 million mark. And so in the last 2.5 years, we've created 45 $1 million CEOs. Mm. So entrepreneurs and small business owners making, you know, low to mid six figures, we get them over the $1 million mark and helping them to build a company that they can sustain while also teaching them how to become the CEO of their company, right? Typically, when you're an entrepreneur making low six figures, you are your business. Your clients are hiring you. And so we want to give them skill sets that allow them to build a company that their clients can hire by building out a team and supporting their efforts to be in the spaces and places that they need to continue to elevate. In this last year, we had 10 new clients cross the $1 million mark, which I'm so excited about. We recognize our clients at our annual live event, Move to Millions, which will be in May. They'll be walking across the stage and getting our Moved to Millions award, which is phenomenal. And what I love about this is our clients are talented, they're mission driven. They do amazing work in the world and they are brilliant at what they do. Helping them to take on and learn the skill of business acumen and becoming a leader and operating a company that operates at this level it's game changing. They are often the first that we talked about a few moments ago, right? They're the first $1 million CEO and millionaires in their families. They're the first to successfully employ other people in many ways. And it is all inspiring. And I am always so humbled by the fact that I, the girl from the projects of Wilmington, Delaware, am a catalyst for this level of change in other people's lives. And, you know, I mean, listen, if you cut me, I bleed, right? I'm just as human as everyone else and crazy and quirky and all of those things. But it is so amazing and humbling to realize that I am using words to change the lives of other people. I am helping people to create generational wealth, right? I think we need more Rockefeller wealth in the Black community, right? We need more seven generations of wealth existing because of the businesses that we build. I think about your own journey and trajectory and what you've accomplished with your company and making billions. And I mean, I'm inspired. My whole body is like one big fat goosebump right now because we make it possible to see that other people can reach for this as well.
I do want to ask you this, in the process of reaching for it, how does an entrepreneur, what is required of an entrepreneur to become a client of yours, and how do you vet that process? How is that process vetted forward?
So it depends on the program that we're talking about, but most of the people that work with us, their businesses are doing at least $250,000 a year. They're caught in what I call the millions messy middle, the chaotic corridor between $250,000 and the $1 million mark, where everything is changing. And because everything is changing, you're losing it. Like your business is breaking. You're questioning whether or not you have what it takes to operate at that level. And you really need someone who can mentor you, who can coach you, who can offer consulting support to help you to expand your capacity and create and elevate your tolerance level. Mm-hmm. And so most of our clients work with us today inside of our Move to Millions Mastermind. And we help them. We work closely with them over a period of 1 to 3 years, because every client is different, every business is different. We create a custom roadmap for their business, nothing cookie cutter about it. And then we support them on the journey to get the systems and foundation in place so that when they start the scaling journey, their businesses don't implode and they don't have to sacrifice anything that's important to them. I'm really big on building a business that serves you financially and spiritually with grace and ease instead of hustle and grind. So we're going to implement the right systems. We're going to make sure that you're in the right space mentally and emotionally and spiritually to have the capacity to have a business that operates at that level. I do believe that you can hustle your way to seven figures, but I don't believe you can sustain it. And the only way we shift and change generational trajectories around wealth and financial literacy is if we build companies that are sustainable.
Wow, you're like a female McKinsey and Company. This is incredible. I love it. I love it. With a perfect verbal SAT score and the habit of reading a new book each week, how do you think this continuous learning contributes to your success? Is the reading of a new book each week something that's a part of that entrepreneur program that you're running? And what type of advice do you give people listening right now with respect to your own personal practice?
Yeah, so I believe that leaders are readers. Mm-hmm. And JBH, I have watched TV many a time and never has money popped out of it. And so I believe that the amount of hours you spend watching TV is going to be equivalent to the amount of dollars that you are leaving on the table that are not coming into your business. And so I don't work all of the time. We've talked about this. I love words, right? Hence mm-hmm. the perfect verbal SAT score in high school. And so for me, reading has always been a thing. And so every single week, like you, it's not behind me. I have one bookshelf that goes all the way over to the wall over there. I have a whole walk-in closet filled with books. So I love to read and I spend as much time as I can with my face in a book. And for a couple of reasons. Number one, because I want to always be expanding my knowledge pool, right? I believe the saying is school is never out for the pro. I don't ever want to operate as if I'm a know-it-all. I don't know it all. I know what I know. And I'm also know the things that I don't know that I need to learn, but there's a whole nother category of things that I'm not even privy to and wouldn't be unless I was constantly putting myself in a position to be able to learn. And I think that a true leader is first a student and creates an environment that allows other people to teach them, right? My employees, they can teach me. I don't even want to know everything, right? Mm-hmm. That's a lot of pressure. So for me, reading, you know, has always been a thing. In our programs, we don't require that they read a book every single week. We do give them 4 books a year. So every 90 days we have our mastermind retreat and they get a new book every quarter. And then we also have a preferred or recommended reading list of books based on where they are in their business and what they are looking to accomplish that we will recommend to them that they read. And so that's the other reason why I read. I'm always looking for fresh approaches. I think that when you are a business consultant, and especially as the marketplace changes, right? We're in a different marketplace in 2024 than we were in even 2023, and we were pre-COVID. And so if I'm still trying to use my pre-COVID strategies in a post-COVID marketplace, I'm probably not going to be successful. And mm-hmm. so staying abreast of what's going on is going to be important. And then the last thing is our clients are not all in the same industry. We mm-hmm. work with attorneys, we work with accountants, we work with entrepreneurs and small business owners that have ethics that they have to consider in their marketing practices. I need to know that if I'm consulting them on how to grow their business. So I'm also reading to be able to serve the client base that I have. I will read something and I only share it once I have proven it to work. So I don't do any theory. I don't take anything I read in a book and pass it off as knowledge that I now have and that I know it will work. I find it in a book. I evaluate it. I tweak it so that it would fit a framework or a process that we utilize with our clients. My team tests it. And then once we have data on it, then it might become something that we teach to other people.
Authenticate it to that experience. To that
exactly.
Experience. You know, Danielle, when I was a little girl, I remember my mom used to save, scrimp and save until she got us the full set of Britannica Encyclopedia. And I don't think kids today even know what encyclopedias are.
They have Google.
and I remember that she was asked by one of our neighbors why she was putting her money into books when there were so many other things that we needed. And, you know, little pictures have big ears. Mm-hmm. And my mom answered with much energy. It was that silent energy where, you know, this is important. And she answered, she said, When I was a girl, one of the worst jokes I ever heard was, if you want to hide something from an N-word, put it in a book. And she said it offended her so much as a child to hear that and then hear people laugh about it. Mm-hmm. So she made certain that her children would have books. And in her mind, having a set of encyclopedia was critical to our ability to research. Now, I grew up during a time when the community was segregated. You know my story, Tower, North Carolina, Panola Street divided, Black from white, no other ethnicity represented except for two Jewish families who were not considered white by the community, by the white community. So having a set of encyclopedia and being successful as a student was important. In my mom's mind, it was important that we be able to read. So she read to us. She didn't just get the books for us. And the other book that she felt was important was the Bible. Everybody had their own Bible. Whether you're there or not, there was so much learning in it, she felt, that we could carry forward. Now, you have successfully integrated your faith with your business practices. How do you navigate potential challenges or criticisms that come from you mixing spirituality with business? How do you keep it legal?
You know what's interesting? I'm sure that there are people who have opinions about me, the intersection of faith and business, but I don't get them. I don't get the naysayers in my DMs talking crazy to me. And if I do, I don't see them, right? Maybe my team takes that out so that I can't see it. So here's the way I look at it. I believe that businesses, careers with a spiritual foundation go farther faster. I won't apologize for it. I could give a lot of examples. And we live in a country that was founded based on religion and an escape from religious persecution. So much so that our money says, "In God we trust." So I look at the Bible as if it's any other book. If I wanted to quote Think and Grow Rich in a keynote, no one would think anything of it. So I quote the Bible without making it something other than a source of illustration of the point that I'm attempting to make. I tell the stories of Jesus and the disciples, or Noah in the ark, and or Moses in the burning bush, just like anybody else would talk about a character in a book that they are referencing as they make a point. And that stance, that confidence, and that energy is why it doesn't get questioned. Mm-hmm. Shame on Fannie Lou Hamer for telling us that we should separate church and state and all the people that bought into it. It's a non-thing for me, because I think that if you put the emphasis on it as if something is wrong with it, then it will be internalized as if something is wrong. And because for me, it's not wrong, it's right. No one questions to my face, to my DMs. Like, so I'm not privy to it. I know personally, I made the decision boldly in 2013 to combine my faith with my business, because I felt compartmentalized and I felt like I was not being authentic. I felt like to hide the God girl that I am. And that doesn't mean that I go on stage and I speak in tongues and I bring my tambourine, like none of the cliches that one might think when you are a person who has a personal relationship with the creator, with God, the creator of our abundant universe, right? But I don't make it a different thing. And so it isn't that way. It's like walking down the street and all of a sudden a dog appears and you show that you are afraid of the dog. The dog was not paying you any mind. But as soon as you showed a sign of a fear and weakness, now he's got your attention and he's chasing after you. So I don't call attention to it, because the Bible is one of the most read and bought books in the world, and it is quotable. And the stories and the lessons, just like your mom said, that are in the Bible can teach us almost anything we need to know and how we need to move in whatever area or career we're in that we're looking to elevate.
Well, in that spirit, explain the model of financial and spiritual abundance.
So I created the model of financial and spiritual abundance. I was working with one client in particular. And what I observed and what I noticed is that she professed to have this amazing relationship and connection with God, but she was not confident in herself and what she wanted to offer to the marketplace. JBH, I don't get it. Like, how can you be in relationship with God and not be confident? I don't understand it. And so as a result of working with her, I recognized that she was religious and not in relationship. And as a result of that, I invited her to try on a new approach to building a connection with God. I believe that if you are in connection and alignment with the Father, then you will be confident. And if you are confident, you will position yourself to create profitability at every transaction. Those are the four pillars inside of the model: connection, confidence, positioning, and profitability. And so through that framework, when we're working with a client to help them to identify their unique selling and their unique value proposition and the messaging that they're going to use in the marketplace and even the prices that they are associating with their products and services, we're making sure that they all line up so that they ultimately get to experience profitability. Because if you solve a problem for someone that they've been unsuccessful at solving on their own, you should be well paid for the solution to that problem. And so often our clients are women. Women, I observe, and I experienced this myself as a child, we are taught as little girls that we should be seen and not heard. And because we are often taught that by adults and chastised when we are heard instead of just being seen, as adults, we grow into business owners who are afraid to market and to exploit their gifts and their talents and what they do well, because doing so means that you're not being humble, or you're being boastful, or you are being heard and not just seen. And so my way of dealing with that is to invite people to really look at who God is and what God says about us, and how, if we truly believe what he says about us to be true, we are doing humanity a disservice to sit on it. Like, if you have the cure to somebody's disease, you wouldn't, like, why would you keep that to yourself? That's selfish. And if you're selfish, can you really be in relationship and alignment with the Father? I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me. So I use that as a framework to help our clients to see that they really do have everything that they need to be successful, and their ability to speak and position themselves as the expert that they are is going to be directly connected to their ability to experience profit for what they do in the world.
This is powerful teaching you're giving. Have you had any clients walk away when you begin to talk on the idea of modeling financial and spiritual abundance? Or are they already aware that that's going to be a part of the package of their learning?
Yeah, so I haven't had any clients walk away specifically for that. I mean, I've had clients that haven't been a right fit and they were like, you know, this isn't the right place for me, which is totally fine. And maybe that was the thing. It just wasn't discussed. But I do think that people know it, right? I'm not secretive about who I am and my work and the fact that I am aligning spiritual principles with business growth strategy for my corporate clients or for my entrepreneur and small business clients. So it's not a secret. I have had clients who would deem themselves to either be atheists or agnostic that come to work with me. And as a result, they find reason in their own life to seek a relationship with God. I don't pass the collection plate. I don't necessarily give the call to Christian discipleship. I live myself in a way that I think it is admirable and it is inspiring for people who want to experience joy, peace, and abundance at the next level to maybe consider it for themselves. But it's definitely not a secret. I don't think anyone would be surprised, because I think if you go find me anywhere online, you will see that the two are consistently combined.
That's true. That is true. I've seen that, Danielle. As we look ahead and before we go to 4 for 4, what's next for Danielle Jervy Harmon and Incredible One Enterprises? How do you plan to next level everything for you and for your clients?
I love this question. And I love it because, you know, this is what I'm actively thinking about, right? I just released a book last year at the end of the year in November on my Move to Millions method, which is doing amazing. In 2 months, we've sold 10,000 copies of the book, which is phenomenal. I'm already thinking ahead to my next book. So that's something that's really important to me, continuing to use words to change the lives of other people. And I'm really focused right now, JBH, on expanding my footprint and making sure that more people know that this is a viable option for them in the land of entrepreneurship, that, you know, everybody is not out here purporting a message to hustle, 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 hustle. I know we live in a country where, you know, the backbone of our country is hard work. And most of us were taught when we were growing up that you had to work hard for money. But I believe that there's another way. And so expanding my reach without having to compromise my message is something that's really, really important to me. And I've set a personal goal that I want to create $500 million CEOs. And so my next level is about continuing to do the work in a way that allows us to really expand our capacity to serve more people, because I want to shift and change the statistics around small business. 0.5% of Black women-owned businesses cross the seven-figure mark. Mm-hmm. That is abominable. Like, it's just crazy, right? I mean, even the fact that only 4.2% of all businesses, 33 million businesses in the United States, and only 4.2% of them make seven figures a year. That is ridiculous. There should be way more. And so I'm going to be more vocal. I'm getting myself out there more to do my part to help to create more companies, because the more companies we have that are making millions, the stronger our economy becomes.
Earning.
Thank you. Earning millions of dollars. The more that we have, the better it is for the economy, for the country, for our legacy. I believe that legacy is financial. Sure, pass down your recipes. But when you're passing down those recipes, let's shift generational trajectories by not only leaving wealth, but teaching them about money so that it can carry on for multiple generations. And it starts with earning millions of dollars inside of your company.
I love that. And it's so important. Thank you for being open to changing the language.
Yes.
To earning. It's not just the fact that making money sends you to jail in just about any country. It's also that the distinction between making and earning are deeply spiritual.
It is.
Deeply mental and deeply important.
Yes.
To your culture of your company. We don't make money. We don't put something together and boom, there's money. We earn it. And earning requires a certain engagement and process. You are an incredible woman who I've waited to have on this podcast. And now I'm excited to go 4 for 4 with you. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. So, Danielle, I'm going to ask you 4 questions to which you'll give me 4 answers. There are no wrong nor right answers, okay? And the first question is, you get to invite anyone to dinner who you wish to have present, from past to present tense, so long as they're human. Who's at your table and why?
Yeah. First, Tyler Perry. When I think about Tyler's story of perseverance and resilience, it inspires me. It inspires me so much more than other stories that are out there that are so great. When I think about him doing those plays and wanting to give up, but, you know, listening to the voice of the Lord and not giving up and doing it even when the numbers weren't substantial enough for him to be able to earn from it. And then when it flipped, mm-hmm. when he walked outside and he saw the line around the building, whenever mm-hmm. I am having a day and I am questioning, it makes me emotional because I love his story.
Yeah.
When I am questioning my purpose and my season of doing this work and it's hard and I get a no, I think of Tyler and it gives me the courage to keep going. And so I would love to be able to sit and have a conversation with him and just pick his brain and just.
Have you visited some of his YouTube posts? Have you seen some of the conversations he's had, whether with Joel Osteen or
yes, where all of them.
I had my nephew. We were in London right at the same time when the Queen of England, Elizabeth, passed away, and we were actually staying in the hotel looking at the building that her body was being delivered to, mm-hmm. and with lots and lots of security around us. And I told him, just sit and just listen to these three that we were YouTubing, right? These three mm-hmm. links on YouTube. And he came back to me later and he said that was so powerful to him. It was almost mm-hmm. as much teaching as he had gotten in the 4 years he was in university. Completely wow. different content, but certainly mm-hmm. supportive of it. Tyler, I'm with you. He really does have on him. And I think he continues to give that gift forward. I think he may even have talked one time about when you have a gift, it's for you to share. It's not yep. to keep it in a box and hold it.
And I love his benevolence. He's so generous. Like, I just, everything about him, I just love it. Second person, Eleanor Roosevelt. And Eleanor, because I would love to hear the firsthand account of being the woman behind the man who made the decisions that flowered so many things that we see and experience today. I've always been intrigued by her story and her journey. And I think it would be really cool to just sit down and have a conversation with her.
And she didn't need to have it out loud. As a matter of fact, I don't think right. she actually could have had it out loud.
Right.
About what she was doing. I know I saw a picture of her on the wall at my alma mater, North Carolina A&T State University. Good
Pride. Right. Yeah, I was going to say Aggie Pride.
I said, what is Eleanor Roosevelt doing up here? And I read further, and she actually had so much investment in yes. the education of African Americans back then and mm-hmm. during her time. And she saw the power of a school that, I don't know if you know it, North Carolina A&T is the largest land-grant school in North Carolina. You talk about having her hand in so much and her influence. It was her decision capability, you know. Beautiful, beautiful dinner going. Who else you got, girl?
Yes. Okay. Third person sitting with me at dinner is David Cameron Jocondi. He wrote the book, A Happy Pocket Full of Money. Mm-hmm. That book changed my life in the way that I look at money. Mm-hmm. I just want to tell him thank you. Mm-hmm. I just want to tell him thank you. And then the last person is Whitney Houston. Because I want her to sing. I want her to sing to us.
Beautiful dinner party. Beautiful dinner party. I'll give you another person you can have at the table so long as it's genuine. I want to be there with all
oh,
that.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I all thought that was given. I thought it was me and you having dinner with these four people.
Hey. You cook or I cook, okay? let's go two for four. Music. What four pieces of music, artists, or compositions are you listening to right now and why?
You know, this was probably the toughest question to prepare for because I don't know what's on the radio today. But let me tell you who I'm listening to right now. So I mm-hmm. am listening to Anita Baker. Mm-hmm. I love Anita Baker. Just everything about her.
I am at the Crypto Center.
Oh, okay.
And she made it feel like an intimate room.
That yeah.
At the center. She made it feel like an intimate room, Danielle.
I love Anita Baker. I just love. I will like probably drive home and listen to Anita tonight. Second person that I'm listening to right now is Daniel Caesar. Mm. I really love his music. My husband and I got married to one of his songs, and so we listen to that a lot. I get you. Yeah. third person I'm listening to right now is Usher. Seeing him at the Super Bowl brought back all the songs. I'm like, oh, let me start listening to Usher again.
Okay, Okay,
right. And then the fourth is Whitney Houston. I love Whitney. I do. I love her. I love her. I love her music. Yeah. So those are my four artists.
Somehow, Danielle, I thought Keith Sweat was going to be in there, but you got a great playlist regardless.
Yeah. I mean, Keith is on the playlist, but, you know, he doesn't have regular rotation like these four artists do right now.
Okay, so we're going 3 for 4. What 4 books do you recommend that our family read and why?
So the first is A Happy Pocket Full of Money. Mm-hmm. So if you really want to understand the psychology and neuroscience around money and what money really is, I highly recommend the book. It's the book that changed my life. I don't think we talked about this very much during the interview, but I filed bankruptcy, and as I stated, in 2010, and the bankruptcy trustee required that I take a financial literacy course in order to discharge my bankruptcy. And the teacher of the class, one of the books was A Happy Pocket Full of Money. So it changed my life. So I love it. I love it. I love it. The second is the book Profit First by Mike Michalowicz. I think Profit First is an amazing financial management system for entrepreneurs and small business owners to get in the habit of making sure that there's profit coming into their business. Profit is how we keep score. So learning how to get your profit first. Mike's assertion is, you know, the traditional definition of profit is, you know, sales minus expenses equals profit. Well, he says sales minus profit equals expenses. Get mm-hmm. your profit first. Make sure that you're being paid well for what it is that you do. And then the third book, right now, this one was hard because I have a lot that I could say, and I had to do the fourth one that I'm going to do. So I chose The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks. It is great if you want to understand how to get and stay in your zone of genius and how to avoid those upper limit problems that threaten to derail you operating from your genius zone. And I think it's a reminder. It's a book I read every single year, just as a reminder that I have to keep myself and keep myself surrounded by people who can do the other thing so that I can be in my zone of genius. And the last book, of course, I have to say this book is my book, Move to Millions, The Proven Framework to Become a $1 Million CEO with Grace and Ease instead of Hustle and Grind.
Fantastic. We're at 4 for 4. You've given so much richness to this conversation. Dig hard. Give us 4 pieces of advice that you think would be really important for our family to adhere to. And Danielle, if it was gifted you by someone else, pay homage and name the person.
Absolutely. The first piece of advice would be to never give up. Never give up. Like, you are important. You matter, right? When I think about Jeremiah 1:5 in the Bible, it says, before you were formed in your mother's womb, God knew and approved you. You are approved. Your validation is already set. So never give up on yourself. That would be number one. Number two would be forgive often. Forgive often. Unforgiveness becomes disease in your body. And I have never been wronged by anyone that is worth my health and wellness. So I forgive often. Number three, speak your truth and stand in your power. If it is true for you, it is worth saying to someone else, especially if what they are saying or attempting to do threatens your truth.
Yeah.
And then number four is life is short. So go after your dreams, chase your purpose. We only get one. And because we only get one, if there's something you want to do, you should do it. I turned 48 in November, and it was almost JBH as I heard a click. I heard a switch flip at turning 48. You know, none of us knows when our sun is going to set. And I realized that it is possible that I won't live another 48 years. And so it helped me to truly reevaluate what's important to me, what's priority, and what are the things that I want to do. And if it's something that I desire to do, I am doing it mm-hmm. unapologetically. And making that decision, it's such a game changer for me, because I have at many times in my life sat on the sidelines like, oh, Paris. I could go to Paris. I could afford to go to Paris. I'm a billionaire, but I'm not going to Paris because of all the things that I would have to do to be able to make it okay to go to Paris. No, if I want to go to Paris, I'm going to Paris. Like, it's just like whatever it is that you desire to do, do it, and do it understanding that it's a gift, that first you have the desire, and that second you actually get to live out the desire.
Wow. Tonya Jervy Harmon, what a visit. What a joy. From my heart to your home.
Thank you.